This is Radio Sai Answering Booth, and I'm Prem, your friend from Team Radio Sai. Salam to all of you and a warm good evening. This is a show where we deal with questions that intrigue us in everyday life. The more we look at the world today, what's happening around us, the dreams that we are told to chase, the kind of life we are prodded to live, the people who become famous, what makes them famous, what it is to have respect and to be heard, what has become of education and learning, what is considered beauty and honor. It feels like we are standing on a heap of debris that covers the true wealth beneath. There's enough scrap for all of us to live on, if that is all we wish to live on. But if we seek the hidden, if we seek the truth, if we seek the meaningful, we must plow deep. Treat the discard as discard and not as a trophy, and plunge for the real. And to do this, we must question. Question why, question how, and keep seeking answers. Unless we do that, it is so easy to be lost in this rut called mundane life. And this show is for such questions. Well, no, I do not have all the answers to your questions, because no one has answers to your questions but yourself. The answers to my questions are within me, and the answers to your questions are within you alone. Consider this as a show that makes an attempt to show you that no question is small, insignificant, or trivial. I hope this show makes us respect our questions and not to ignore them. Because it is when we answer our questions, we can plow past this debris of meaninglessness in every aspect of life. And when we ignore these questions and carry on with life, we only choose to fill our life with trinkets. So never, ever stop asking questions. This is a show of questions and answers, so yes, we have an interesting question to wrestle with today, but before that, I wish to read for you a short, simple, and profound quote. These are the words of the renowned Greek philosopher Plato, student of Socrates and teacher to Aristotle. I quote, "For a man to conquer himself is the first and the noblest of all victories." End of quote. This seems like an extension of the brief monologue I started with, isn't it? We fill our life with many achievements and little victories. We strive for and earn the respect of others. We establish ourselves as knowledgeable and talented. We encash our victories and become rich and progress in life. Eventually, when we look back, we find that life is so empty and we wonder, what have we really achieved? What have we done with our life? Imagine you're given a small room and you are told within a week's time you have to fill this room with some object or the other of your choice. From the ceiling to the floor, you must fill it with the object of your choice. And someone gives you a brilliant idea. They say, buy balloons, fill air in them and fill the room with these balloons. And that's what you do. It does fill the room, no doubt. You then lock up the room, satisfied that the work is done. And then you come back after a week and you find that the balloons have all shrunk to the size of tennis balls. And suddenly the room is almost as empty as it was given to you. That's what happens to our lives too. We fill it with victories that appear big when we accomplish them. Spurred by it, we go after more such victories and fill our life with them. And at the end of life, when we look back, it all seems so empty and pointless. That's why Swami would say, man is trying to conquer the space above and deep oceans, but has not explored the space within and has not traversed one inch deep in his own heart. Man is trying to conquer and subdue the forces of nature through his yukti or intelligence, but he does not see the importance of conquering the vagaries of his own mind and striving for mukti or liberation. Swami would tell us, students, pursue secular education, it's not wrong, but at least some part of that education and learning must help you conquer yourself and to understand your own reality. The nature to dominate another person is a very natural trait in all of us. The father wants the children to obey him, the boss wants to have control over his employees, the teacher wants the class to be obedient, the wife tries to dominate the husband tries to dominate the wife. Can we consciously turn this trait within and as Swami says, conquer our emotions and weaknesses? We must say to ourselves, no one can decide when I will be angry, no one can decide what I will crave for, no one can decide when to make me happy or unhappy. No one can make me feel weak. No one can tell me I'm inadequate or useless. When we are truly not controlled by the forces outside, we have then conquered ourselves. That does not mean that we lead our lives regardless of what happens outside, unmindful of others' needs and happinesses. It's like a perfect balancing act. We do what is required of us, we respond to the needs around us, but nothing that happens outside will affect our happiness and peace. We then would have truly conquered ourselves. So before we move to the question of the week, permit me, dear listeners, to read the quote by the Greek philosopher Plato one more time. I quote, "For a man to conquer himself is the first and the noblest of all victories." Let's head to the question that we have for this week. The question this week is from Sister Purna from Sharjah. We've had a few questions from her. She's a regular listener and she's sent us wonderful questions before. So this week too, we have an interesting question from her. She's been kind enough to send us her question in her own voice, something which always makes me happy. So let's listen to the question and then let's see what answer we can come up for the question that she has posed to us.
Sahiram brother, thank you very much for your wonderful program. Some people achieve more with less effort and time than others. I accept that I take more time to do certain things. Though we all differ in our skills and talents, internally we all have the same power within us. This understanding helps me to accept myself and also others who are like me. Is there anything that we can do to improve ourselves? Thank you.
Thank you, Sister Purna, for that wonderful question. The question here is about some of us needing more time and effort to accomplish the same work that probably others do it much more easily. And as Sister Purna says, one is we accept that though all have the same power within, people are different in the outside. We accept it and empathize with the others who are like us. That's what she says that she does. And the question is there anything more that we can do with regards to self-improvement? There are two aspects to this question as I see it, or two ways of looking at the problem that she's put in front of us. One is when we talk of achieving something which we set for ourselves, a target, or we want to acquire a talent or acquire a certain ability. It's about achieving something, setting a goal for ourselves and achieving it, and the efforts that we need to put in that regard. And the other aspect is about how much time we take to complete a task that is given to us, right? I think these are a little different, though the solution to it may be pretty similar as we will see, but these are two different things. I hope that you're able to appreciate the difference. One is when somebody gives us a task, I take a certain amount of time to do it. Somebody else may be able to do it faster, and that leads to a certain amount of comparison, be it in the homes or in our workspace or even in our schools and colleges. The other thing is about when we set a target for ourselves, I want to acquire a particular talent or a particular ability. Some people seem to be doing it much easier, and for some people it takes much more effort and time, right? So let's start with how much that each takes a different amount of time to accomplish a certain task. Yes, that does differ, and sometimes there are people who give a lot of time to achieving something. You know, there's one example that we've heard from Swami a lot is Italian violin maker called Antony. Swami would say that he would take 1 year to produce one violin, and I think even today they are the standards of violin making, because he was a perfectionist, and Swami would say that I'm doing this as an offering to God and it can be nothing less than perfect. So even if it means that I'm going to have a meager livelihood because of me taking so long to make a violin, it doesn't matter. This has to be perfect, so I'm going to give it one full year. But the thing is, I don't think we all have the luxury to invest so much time into one of the things that we do. Probably I would put it this way, that if perfection is the motive of us doing something, and doing it slowly and diligently may be the right thing to do, like in the case of Antony the violin maker, because he knew that him giving more time to this art of making the violin is going to result in a more perfect product, which is his offering to the Lord. And that's how it was, Swami was giving him as an example, right? But sometimes, to be able to accomplish a certain task in a short period of time may also be part of the idea of perfection of that task, right? Let's say you're cooking for your family. You can't say that I'll take so many hours to make one chapati because I'm a perfectionist and this chapati has to be perfect because it's an offering to God. I think in that scenario, you delivering within the time is also part of the idea of perfection of the act. I can't sit here and say that I'm going to take one whole year to prepare for one episode of Radio Sai Answering Booth. I can't do that because we have a limited time frame. I have to deliver every week. You have to deliver every day for dinner, right? So when certain tasks come with a certain time frame, I think the idea of perfection in accomplishing that task also involves a little bit of doing it within a time frame or doing it a little swifter. So in such scenarios, I think if we are slow, maybe we'll have to put in more effort, practice harder or whatever it takes to improve our speed and our ability to accomplish the same task within the given period of time. So in most scenarios, I think it starts by we defining the idea of perfection for that particular work. Yes, if we have a work and perfection of that work is putting a lot of time into it, and we have all the time, let's say that, you know, you're working on a book or something like that, and you feel that if you're going to put in 5 years into it or 6 years into it, you're going to bring out the best you can, and that's going to be your offering to Swami. And if you have all that time, I think, yes, maybe the idea of perfection of that particular activity is defined by you taking all the time. But there are many, many things where being quick, being swift is part of the idea of perfection of that. Let me give you a very random example. Say there's a doctor who's known for his patience. He's very, very calm and he has all the time. Let's say when he's in the OPD or the outpatient department and he's talking to a patient, let's say he listens very, very calmly and he does not hurry up the patient. He speaks very sweetly. And he exchanges pleasantries with the patient so that the patient feels relaxed and he's able to communicate what's his problem better. And the doctor, you know, goes through his case sheet very, very diligently, slowly and meticulously and all of that. Now, this doctor is a good doctor. What he's doing is the right thing, that if you're able to give that much time. But let's say the same doctor is called into the emergency room and there is a patient who is lying there on the bed with unbearable pain. And imagine if the same doctor walks in very calmly and he is like very casually going through the report and he's exchanging pleasantries with the paramedics and he's asking them, so what is it? What is the case? How is the patient? I think in that scenario, the doctor giving more time to the action, to the work at hand is not perfection of accomplishing that work, right? The same doctor, if you're talking of a doctor who is perfect, he knows that when he goes into the emergency room, when he's treating a patient with some kind of an emergency like that, the perfection in his duty is doing things swiftly and taking quick decisions and, you know, doing whatever is necessary quickly. So I think it all starts with, when we take up something, to define what is perfection of that particular activity, right? So it's important to start with that. So define the idea of perfection for the work at hand, and if completing the work is quickly if completing the work quickly is part of the idea of perfection, then yes, we have to consciously make efforts in that regard to speeden ourselves up, right? And of course, there's another very general way by which we must assess ourselves in tasks like this, but I think I'll come to that in the very end, which is a very, very general thing. Now I'll come to this point of achievements. You know, when we want to achieve something, when we want to acquire a certain skill or a talent, and you always see that there are some people who have it very, very easy, right? And I think we always come across this in schools and colleges. We'll probably take hours to complete a chapter, and these people would breeze through a chapter in a few minutes, and their understanding of that chapter will be far more pronounced and comprehensive than us. You always find people like that. I recall when I was in school, I used to have this student who had this phenomenal memory, and we all would find it very difficult to memorize shlokas in Sanskrit during the Sanskrit class. So the teacher would write a shloka on the board and then she would explain the meaning of it and explain the meaning of each word of that shloka. and probably spend about 10-15 minutes talking about that shloka. And there used to be this boy who would, you know, the teacher would write it on the board and then she would give this explanation and he would put up his hand as though he has a doubt. And the teacher will look at him and the boy will tell the teacher, you know, madam, I've memorized the shloka. Can I recite it? And he would be able to recite it instantly. He would have, that's 5 minutes or 10 minutes is all that he takes to memorize that shloka. And he will remember it till the exam time. You know, that was a phenomenal talent that he had. And there were a couple of people who could do that. And we would feel really left out because we would struggle so hard to learn that. And even after learning it, you know, the day before the exam, if we don't revise all of that, none of it will be in our memory. So it always happens like that. There will be some people who will be able to achieve some things much, much more easier than we are able to do it. We always come across some people like that. But before I come to why that happens, let's talk about this idea of achieving something. You set a goal for yourself or you set a task for yourself and you have to achieve it. Swami says that three components actually go into that. And first and foremost, Swami would say this is the will to achieve it. You have to first choose to achieve it. You have to make up your mind that this is something that I want to accomplish, right? The word Swami would use is called sankalpa. So Swami would say it all starts with that will or the desire or that feeling that or the resolve that I want to achieve this. So that's one thing. And the other two components are self-confidence and self-effort, right? So anything that needs to be achieved, Swami says, first, the resolve to achieve it or the will to achieve it, what we call sankalpa, then the self-confidence that, yes, I can achieve it, and the third is the effort that we must put in, right? And this sankalpa is, of course, the most important thing if you look at it, because Swami would often say there are many discourses where Swami says the entire world has come out of sankalpa. Swami would say it's the sankalpa of the divine which has created this whole world, and each one of us create our own world through the thoughts that we have, through the feelings and ideas that come in our mind. So Swami would say that everything begins with sankalpa, and Swami says the whole world also dissolves finally into a sankalpa. So that is why this is the most important thing. What we place our mind upon, what we decide or choose to go after is the most important thing. And many times when we are children, when we are growing up, our parents choose what we have to go after, right? Our parents give us a dream, our parents give us a goal, and they ask us to go after it. And Swami would say this, I recall in a discourse which Swami was giving in Trai Vrindavan, Swami was talking about the habit of waking up early in the morning. So Swami was making fun, and Swami saying that, yeah, I know some of you boys wake up early, but some of you boys, you know, you don't even brush your teeth. You come like that for Suprabhatam, and you come there, and then you sleep. You cover your blanket, and then you sleep. And I think I should say that even I'm guilty of that many, many times. But Swami was saying that, you know, this is happening, and Swami was giving this beautiful explanation. Swami said that it is happening because you're being forced to do that. It's part of the rules. Your warden is asking you to do that. Your teacher is asking you to do that. You're being forced to do that. So you are doing it nevertheless. But since it is forced upon you, it is something which will not stick with you. It's something which will fizzle away. So Swami is saying that anything that comes from force will not, it's not a resolve that is yours, which you will hold on to and work towards. Only that which comes from the source will be your real resolve, your real sankalpa. So many times when we are children, when our parents give us a dream like that, yes, initially it's forced, but if there is any form of we attaching ourselves to that dream, if we make that dream our own, if they manage to convince us that it's our dream and then we make it our own and then we make it our resolve, or if we think that, you know, this is what is going to make my parents happy and I have to do it, that becomes your dream, right? It might not be the accomplishment of the task itself, but the idea that if I accomplish it, I'll be able to please my parents, that becomes the dream, that becomes the sankalpa that drives you. So in some form, I think that needs to become your own. In fact, I was once listening to an interview of one of the very, very famous Hindustani singers. He was a phenomenally talented singer. I mean, his once you listen to him, it's very difficult to believe what he said. He said that he never wanted to be a singer. As a child, he did not like the idea of singing Hindustani classical music. So it was literally forced on him because he was born into a family where all of them were singers, and the idea of becoming a singer was forced on him. But eventually he said that he started becoming so good at it, he started performing, and it became so natural for him, and he started loving it. He became very passionate about singing, and that's how he is a great singer right now. So at some time, what is forced upon us, if it becomes our own, if it becomes something which comes from the source, then it's a will that we will work towards, right? So it's very important that first and foremost we have a will. And talking about Sankalpa, Swami says that when we have resolves, when we dream about certain things, when we want to achieve certain things, the next most important thing is, what is the purpose that drives that resolve? What is the purpose which fires that particular desire that we have? It's very important to look at that. And Swami would say that that is what defines whether that sankalpa is a shuddha sankalpa or is it a pure sankalpa. And that is why the purity of purpose is very, very important in whatever we do. I'll come to that in a bit, because that's very important. Swami speaks about that. That's one way where, that's one of the things which we have to keep in mind. The other two things are, as I said, self-confidence and self-effort. So once we've made a resolve to achieve something or we want to accomplish something, Swami says the next thing is a small amount of investment of self-effort and self-confidence. It starts with, I mean, we don't have to labor extensively or, you know, say that I'm going to work like crazy and put all my effort into it. Swami says it starts with a little bit of self-confidence and a little bit of self-effort. And after that, there is probably a small threshold at which you would find that your effort starts showing results, right? When we start putting in efforts with a little bit of self-confidence that, yes, I can do this, I want to achieve this, I can do it with my effort. So that's the investment with which you start. And then when you start seeing results, the self-confidence grows that I can do something with my own self-effort. Then you're ready to put in more of your self-effort. You're more confident. It becomes like a cycle that you're able to put in more effort. You gain more confidence. Then you see better results. Then you're ready to put in more effort. But initially, there is a threshold point, and it's only after that threshold point you will start seeing results for your efforts. And this threshold point is at different levels for different people, right? There are some people for whom with a little bit of effort, they start seeing results and then they start putting more efforts. But for some of us, the threshold point is a little higher, that we need to put in more effort and we need more self-confidence. And talking about this confidence, where does this confidence come from? I think that initial confidence is what comes from outside, from the people around us, our parents telling that we can do it, our family or friends telling us, no, you can do it, you can achieve it. And sometimes even when we don't have this confidence ourselves, when people around us are positive, it really helps us a lot. In fact, we've seen this with so many times with some of the students in the hostels. You know, they would come in with a very, very rudimentary talent in singing or in playing an instrument or the ability to speak. But the moment that encouragement from Swami comes, that confidence which comes with that is so enormous that, you know, in a span of about 4 years, 5 years, when they're leaving the college, they are, I mean, talent-wise, their ability-wise, they would have improved so much. And that comes from that confidence which Swami gives them. Of course, whenever we bring Swami into the picture, it's not just about the confidence which comes from another person or another individual in our life. It's much more than that. We know that. But this idea that when somebody believes in us, when somebody believes in our dreams, the confidence that they can give is very important. So especially for those of us who have this threshold point a little higher, and I can tell this for myself too, right? Because we all have that field which we struggle so much when somebody else has it so much easier. So when our threshold point to see results for the efforts that we put in is a little higher, I think it only means that we need to put in more effort, more confidence, we need more self-belief in doing what we are doing. And once we cross the threshold point, I think, as I said, it becomes like a cycle. You start seeing results, then you're ready to put in more effort, and then you start seeing more results, and then it becomes like a cycle, right? So this point of why is it that for some people the threshold point is lower than the others? You know, when we look around, we see many people like this. We see child prodigies around. There are some people who are naturally skillful. When we were students, there will be some students who are naturally very skillful when it comes to sports. They'll be able to take up any sport very, very, very casually. They'll be able to do it when we are struggling with one sport, and they would be, they'll flourish in all the games. Similarly, there will be some people who are very good at everything. They'll be good at academics, and they'll be good at some extracurricular activities too. So why is it that some people have lower thresholds? I think, as Swami would say, it all comes from the past karmas, right? Sometimes when we place our heart on something, when we take a resolve that I want to achieve this, I want to become a good singer, I want to become a sportsman. Swami says that maybe it is not enough, you have not put in enough effort in that lifetime. But you've invested your dreams and your thoughts in that desire to become that. So Swami says, if you have enough good merit to back up that dream, in the next birth you start off from that point. You start off with somebody who has that natural talent, who has that natural ability. Swami says that's why some people are so talented in a very young age. Some people gain fame in a very young age. Swami says because at some point that desire to become famous was so strong and so much effort was put into it. So Swami says you start your next life with a certain amount of fame and the talent given to you. So that's what it is when I say the threshold point is a little lower for, some people. But now, going back to this idea of self-effort, see, even in the case of those people who seem to be having it very easy, when they, we see that around so many people, they're born to talented musicians and eventually they become musicians themselves. And we see that in different industries where people are born to parents who are talented and eventually they're able to very easily get into that groove and get into that particular field. Whether it is coming easy or whether it is coming tough, whether a threshold point is lower or whether a threshold point is higher, I think one thing is very important, that is the effort that goes into it. Even the best of the best, if they are not ready to put in that amount of effort to sustain what they've got or to progress in what they've got, it does not stay. So that self-effort that we put in to achieve something is a given. So whether or not, before we start trying to achieve something, if we say that I want to acquire this talent or this ability, we don't know whether a threshold point is going to be low or high. It doesn't matter because whoever it is, that effort that has to go in is very, very important. It's just that when things don't show up as results as soon as we expect, we just have to keep at it for a little longer, because that comes to the point of confidence. There's something that you mentioned in your question itself, Sister Purna, where you said that, everybody has the same abilities within. I think our self-confidence must come from that point. As Swami says, there is absolutely nothing that you cannot achieve. If there is something that can be achieved by another person, it can be achieved by you. So I think Swami says that self-confidence should come from not the small self, but the self with a capital S, which means the divine power within. So when we're talking about self-confidence in that equation, when we say that self-confidence and self-effort is required, I think when we start off trying to achieve something, it should be very, very clear to us that there is absolutely nothing that I cannot achieve if I choose to achieve it, right? So when that is taken out of the picture, it's just the question of putting in the effort and time required for what we want, right? And so that is why the idea of what are the things that we are going to place our desires and our abilities on becomes so very important. Swami would often say this. I might have mentioned this in an answer before. Swami would say that the divine is present as different aspects within this human experience. And Swami would say that the Hiranyagarbha aspect of God is present as sankalpas in the mind, which means that every thought that we have, every desire and dream that we have is actually a potential future. It can become reality. And Swami would say that is why it's very important to keep purifying the kind of thoughts that we have, purifying the kind of purposes that we set for ourselves in our life. So the purification of our intentions and desires is very, very important, and it's a process that it has to go on constantly, right? And when I say that with self-confidence, the idea that anything can be achieved is there, it comes down to the idea of, so I can achieve anything in the world, but let me choose what I am going to go after. Let me choose in what I'm going to invest my time and energy. In life, our efforts, our time and energy are the premium, right? Time and energy is the premium in life. The question is, where do I want to invest it? And when this comes, if we choose a certain talent to acquire or a certain accomplishment to go after, the next thing is, why am I wanting to achieve this thing? What is the purpose behind this intention? And if we are able to purify that, are we trying to say that I want to become famous? You know, we see many, many people doing all kinds of little things for a few moments of fame. You know, so many records are broken and there are all kinds of absurd things. So the question that we need to ask is, just for the sake of a little bit of popularity and fame, is it worth going after this particular accomplishment? Is it worth investing my time and energy on this? I think that's the question that we need to ask. And in a way, when Swami speaks about the ceiling on desires, it's not about completely getting rid of desires. I think that's the eventual thing that we all need to do. But Swami says that you look at this huge list of desires that you have in life, and it comes from the acknowledgement that you do not have the time and energy to go after all those desires. So now you start prioritizing your desires. What are the desires that really are worthy going after? What are the desires which are really pursuing? What are the dreams which are really worth pursuing? And then you start prioritizing them and giving that more time and effort. And this process of prioritization happens by seeing the intention behind that dream. So that's why Swami would say that, are you trying to pursue something just for the sake of fame and name? Or is there a higher purpose to that? If we want to achieve something, if there is a purpose that more people will benefit out of this, or if I achieve this, Swami will be happy, and this will be a perfect offering to make to Swami. If we genuinely feel that way, I think those are dreams and accomplishments which are worth going after. But if we are trying to achieve something just to show somebody that, you know, this is what I am, I can do this, and gain the respect of somebody else or gain the acceptance of somebody else, I think we need to look at it and say that, is it really worthwhile to pursue this? So as I said, it comes from these three things: the will or the sankalpa, the self-effort, and the confidence. Can we come to a point where we say that there is nothing that we cannot achieve? Because Swami says that you are essentially divine and there is nothing that you cannot achieve. With effort and time, anything can be achieved. So then the question becomes, what are the things that I'm going to go after? What are the things I'm going to invest my time and effort on? So that comes to this idea of purification of the intention. Look at it. Why do I want to achieve this? Is it worthwhile going after it? And if we feel that it is worthwhile going after it, then I think we should not hesitate to put in that time and effort, how much ever it requires. Right? So that is, I think, the process in which we need to approach the idea of wanting to achieve something. We must consciously give priority to those achievements that are attached to a higher purpose, right? And when I say higher purpose, will it benefit more people? Will it, is it in any way going to make me a better person? I think that's another way of looking at it. And that is the way in which the purification of the sankalpa is happen. I mean, we need to approach that idea. Now, in the last part of the answer, what I would like to talk about is, you know, we talk about filling a life with activity. And Swami would often say this, from the time you're born to the time you breathe your last breath, you're constantly doing activities. And that's why it's so important to look at what we are doing. And I think so many questions we have had only relating to the karma theory. We've spoken extensively about it. There is another classification of the different actions that we indulge in, right? But this does not really come under karma theory. This, truly speaking, comes under the Purva Mimamsa school of Vedanta. And If those of you who know, the Mimamsa schools are all about the Vedic rituals and traditions, about doing yajnas and doing ritualistic observances and things like that. So this categorization of karmas, there are three or four types of karmas which come there. I'm not going to strictly stick to what these karmas are as defined in that school of Vedanta, in Purva Mimamsa school of Vedanta. But I'm just going to take this idea of these four categories. And I would like to, I want to invite you all to think along with me in this line. So first, let me give you that four categories of karmas, the different activities that we indulge in everyday life. What are those four types of actions that we perform? These are Nitya Karma, Naimittika Karma, Kamya Karma, and Nishiddha Karma. Right? Nitya Karma, Naimittika Karma, Kamya Karma, and Nishiddha Karma. And as I said, I'm not going to strictly stick to the meanings as given in Purva Mimamsa, but the definition of each of these terms itself, I think we will be able to relate to in our own life how we do different activities and what they are. Probably we'll get the most irrelevant thing for the discussion out of the way, and that is Nishiddha Karma, or the karmas which are prohibited, which you're not supposed to do. Homicide, adultery, cheating others, and all of those activities which we know that are clearly sins. So those come under the category of Nishiddha Karma. The more you do them, then you're taking your ticket to hell, right? That's all I can define that as. Karmas which are prohibited, you're not expected to do them at any point in time, you're supposed to keep away from them. So those are called Nishiddha Karma. So we'll start with the first one which I said, which is Nitya Karma. And as the name itself suggests, Nitya means something which is done forever, or Nitya is something which is done every day, is the other way of defining Nitya Karma. So this Nitya Karma are things that we do on a daily basis. The caring for the body, the brushing, the bathing, the morning ablutions, and all of that come under Nitya Karma, right? But this Nitya Karma has a little more general definition for it. So Nitya Karma is something that if we do not do it, then, or probably I'll put it this way, these are actions that if we perform them, we will get no merit out of it. But if we do not perform them, then we will lead to some form of decline, right? So instead of merely seeing that as daily task like brushing the teeth and having bath, in a more general sense, Nitya Karma is that activity that we have to do every day. By doing that, you do not accrue any merit. It's not that you're going to make any progress doing them, but when you stop doing them, it'll lead to decline, right? An example which I can give is, imagine something like rock climbing or mountain climbing. And when you do an act such as a rock climbing, there are two things that you have to constantly do. One is, you have to ensure that you don't fall, you don't fall behind, you don't slip down. The other thing is, you have to keep progressing, right? So one is holding on or hanging there, and the other is progressing. So, and imagine that you're in the beginning part of that exploration, or you're in the foot of the hill. In that place, what you need to do to not slip down is actually much lesser effort. But as you go higher and higher in that process of rock climbing or mountain climbing, you need to do more effort to ensure that you don't fall itself. You need to hold harder, you need to cling on to the rock harder. So the effort to not slip down starts increasing as you progress in that act. Same is the case with this idea of Nitya Karma. When we start in the spiritual path, that which comes under Nitya Karma is a very, very small category of things. That which we, the regular ablutions towards the body will probably come as Nitya Karma. But as we progress, to not slip, many more activities have to be done. And this is something which Swami would say, that, when you come to the ashram, let's say that you're living in Prashanti Nilayam, you're living here, many of the things that you would have done as special activities before you came here, after you come here, they are activities which will not give you any merit, but if you don't do them, then you will start slipping down. So some of the regular schedules that you have to attend in the ashram here become Nitya Karma. They are things that you do every day, and you do them every day not to progress, but to not slip further down, right? So, so that is what is Nitya Karma. So broadly defined, that which you do every day, Right? And if you look at it, some of the work that we perform as our dharma towards the family, dharma towards the station we are in life, as a mother, as a father, as a brother, or as a citizen towards the country, all of this become like nitya karma, that you're supposed to do them, and if you don't do them, you actually start slipping. By doing them, probably you will not get any progress. Or so it appears. I'll come back to that in a short while now, after I define what is naimittika karma. Now the second one, naimittika karma, to understand that the word naimittika, the word itself comes from the word nimittam. And nimittam is very popularly quoted from the Bhagavad Gita, where Krishna tells Arjuna, nimittam atram bhavasavya sakchi, right? Where the word nimittam actually means instrument. So naimittika karma is the activities that we do as being instrumental of the situation that we are put in, right? They are contextual or situational activities that we have to do. It's not common for everybody. It's not like what is my naimittika karma will be your naimittika karma, right? Maybe I'll put it in this way. Let's give the example of somebody who was born into a very good family. Everybody is educated in the family. The parents are educated. You are put into a good school, and you use all the opportunities that are given to you. You study well, then as a natural progression, you go into a good university, you get a good degree, then you join the corporate world, and you work appropriately at the different times. You utilize the different opportunities which come by you, and eventually you become a CEO. Now, this is actually a very linear progression of the various opportunities that were given to you. So if somebody is born into a family, you kind of extrapolate his life to lead towards a success that you see 40, 50 years later. So these are actually not achievements. These are actually riding on the various situations that you have been placed in, right? There are no achievements in this. You've just been utilizing whatever situation you've been given in. And that's why these are actually actions which can be referred to as naimittika karma, right? You've just been like an instrument. You've been a good instrument, no doubt, but you've just been an instrument. You've been given good education, you've absorbed that, you've been given good values and behavioral traits, you've absorbed them, you maintain a good decorum all through your life, and then you utilize all the opportunities that come in your profession. So in that sense, there is no question of achievement there, right? You're just very naturally progressing, and you've literally, you've been riding a wave, and you've reached a certain stage. So yes, there has been progress, but this progress cannot be called achievement at all. And this idea of the nitya karma and naimittika karma, it's actually the line between that is quite porous. A lot of things that are naimittika karma, as I said, become nitya karma. Just like, a lot of things that we do as our dharma actually becomes nitya karma. As I was explaining, one of the things is some of the activities that we do in the ashram. If you're going to live in the ashram, some of these things actually become your everyday activities. They do not add any merit to you. On the other hand, not doing them actually might lead to some kind of a slip in your progress. And many of the nitya karmas, what were considered nitya karmas, have become naimittika karmas now. For instance, as I was saying, Swami would say that the role that you play as a mother, the role that you play as a father, is actually it's a given. You're supposed to do it. If you don't do it, you start slipping. But Swami says that in the Kali Yuga, it is so rare to find somebody who is even dharmically sticking to all his or her roles, that doing that itself becomes a naimittika karma, that you actually start progressing when you start doing that. So this line between naimittika karma and nitya karma is quite porous. The activities keep going from this side to that side. But when we talk about achievements, when we talk about achieving something in life, that does not come through nitya karma and naimittika karma. And it's very important for us to look at ourselves. We pride ourselves for many achievements. We say that, I'm a very good singer now, I'm a very good speaker now, or I've achieved this, I'm a director, I'm a vice president of a company. I think it's very important for us to look at ourselves and say, how much of it is really an achievement? Because most of the time we are living within the comfort of our own lives and we are able to achieve a certain amount. It's a very, very mild progression in what our achievement is, and we achieve a certain stage which is nothing but an extrapolation of all the chances and opportunities which have been given to us. So being born in a family like that, given all the opportunities at the end of 30 years, if you're in a certain stage, I don't think we can look at ourselves and say that these are my achievements. Those were expected of us because we just were good instruments. We just utilized all that which came to us. So I think it's very important to look at ourselves and look at all the achievements which we claim to be achievements and say, are they really achievements, or are they, as I was saying, just utilization of the opportunities which came? They cannot be called achievements. They just mean that you've been a good instrument all through. Achievements are those that we achieve by stepping out of our comfort zones, doing some things which are absolutely out of our way, and that is what really achievement is. Or we start swimming against our tide. And that's why this idea of Kamya Karma, according to Vedanta, is the different rituals that you perform with a certain desire in your mind, that you want, the Putra Kamishti Yajna is supposed to be a form of Kamya Karma, that you want to achieve something, you want to have children at the end of it, and so you perform a certain Yajna. So Kamya Karma is that which you place your mind or you place your dreams on a certain achievement, and you do tasks to achieve it. So when we talk about achievements, it's about that. When we resolve to achieve something, and then we swim against the time, we step out of our comfort zones and go after certain achievements. I think that is what is really achievement. Everything else that we've got, I think if we start reviewing, are they really achievements, or have we just found them by just walking along the path without falling or slipping down? I think we'll find that our achievements are actually very, very few. The true achievements are those that we really challenge ourselves, we step out of life, we swim against the tide, and then we achieve something. Those are the real achievements, right? Not all of us really are adventurers in that sense. We don't go out of our way and do some things. But for most of us, I think the idea what is important is to be able to operate outside our comfort zones. How much of our time and effort we are able to invest in this idea outside of a comfort zone, I think that happens through the adversities that we face in life. For most of us, it's about how we handle these adversities which come into our life. That is what challenges us to step out of our comfort zones. You all are aware of Brother Raghu, who works at Radio Sai, he's a person who has gone through a very life-changing accident, and that has made him confined to a wheelchair once. I've known him through those years when he was coping up with that tragedy, and how he changed his life, and how he eventually joined Radio Sai and started working. And there's one thing that he used to tell, that when the accident happened and he was confined to the bed for many, many months, and after that slowly he started doing things on his own, he started operating the computer, and he started trying to eat on his own. And he would say this. He said, it's like I've learned all this as a child. Growing up as a toddler, I've learned all this. Now suddenly at the age of 20, I'm having to relearn all this. Right? He said it's like reinventing the wheel. And the spirit that he has is phenomenal. I mean, we've spoken so many times about it. The ability to swim against the tide. So whatever he has achieved is, the situation around him suggests that, you have to confine yourself to the bed and you should not try to do all these things. Yeah, just lead your life like that, confined to a room. That is what the situation around him suggests. But it is when you push against all of these odds, when you take the adversity on your face, and you challenge yourself and push yourself to achieve some things, I think that is what is an achievement. And that comes to us in different forms. Now, going back to this idea of the question that you asked, that some people get to do things much more easily and some of us struggle with some things. you know, when that happens, I think eventually it leads to some form of comparison or the other within the family, within siblings. There are comparison, or in a office, there's comparison between different people, and within a family, we are compared with others in the family, within cousins. I think it happens all the time. Oh, so-and-so is doing so well, or so-and-so is able to do this so well. Why are you not able to do this? I think all of these comparisons are the situations outside which says that, oh, you're a weakling, you cannot do this, or this is not within your ability. I think these are the adversities, and we are, the moment we say that, okay, I accept this, This is something that I cannot do. No, I cannot become, I cannot learn this instrument, or I cannot become a good speaker, or I cannot master this language, or whatever it is, whatever we set our mind upon. The moment we acknowledge when the situation around us is making us believe something, and the moment we start believing that, I think what we are doing is we are going into our own comfort zones. And how much ever we operate within that comfort zone, we are not going to be able to achieve anything. If we want to achieve something of worth, at some point or the other, we will have to step out of that comfort zone. And that is why, even though we are not adventurers, we are not going to go and say that, oh, I'm going to cycle from this end of the country to that end of the country, or I'm going to swim across the English Channel or something. Not all of us challenge ourselves like this. But we all have these kind of adversities in life. And that is why Swami says that we need to accept these challenges which come, because these are the challenges which will always keep prodding us to come out of that comfort zone. And this is all about worldly achievements. If we want to achieve something which people in the world will look at and say, oh my God, he has achieved this, or she has accomplished this. For even a worldly achievement, we have to step out of our comfort zone. And now if we are talking of something which is a spiritual achievement, if we want to progress spiritually, it goes without saying that you have to be ready to step out of our, we have to be ready to step out of our comfort zone. And that is why probably when we take to a spiritual path, this is something which many people observe and many people question about. Why is it that I've taken to a spiritual path and I start finding so many obstacles in my life, so many more challenges and difficulties come to me? Maybe this is the reason, that it is not that you are being pushed back or you're being told that, oh, this, you're not ready for this path, but we are given challenges so that when we do not accept these situations putting us down and we step out of it, I think that's when we step out of our comfort zone. And unless and until we step out of our comfort zone and put efforts, I think there is no way that we will be making progress, right? Now, going back again to that point of self-improvement and accomplishing tasks faster, I think that was the other part of the question that we started with, right? So I think it again goes back to this. I've seen many people who can accomplish a certain task within a certain time, right? And in the workspace you will find people like that, or you, in the ashram you will find people like that. See, after 5 years and after 10 years we are doing the same work, and if I'm able to do only that much work in that much time, then it is not that I'm giving my perfect. I'm not a perfectionist in that sense. So many times We settle into our own comfort zones. We say that, yeah, I take so much time to do this. You know, I will take so many hours to accomplish this task. And we look at somebody else and say, yeah, you might be able to do that, but this is all I am able to do. I think the question is, we need to look at ourselves and say that, are we really doing it as an act of perfection? Are we really saying that this is something that I'm doing for Swami, it has to be perfect, and I'll do it slowly and diligently? Is it coming out of that attitude? Or are we slipping into our own comfort zones? And that's why when we say comfort zone, it's not necessarily a cozy and a happy corner. Even saying that, no, I cannot do this. Even saying that, oh, I am very weak, or I do not have this talent, I do not have this ability, is also a form of getting into a cozy comfort zone. So the comfort zone is not always about, I'm happy with what I am, right? It's also labeling ourselves as weak. And I think that is one thing which Swami would often say, that, you know, don't accept yourself to be weak. You're not weak. I recall Swami once speaking about this statement, which we say, to err is human. So Swami would say, who's saying all of these things? To err is not human. To be divine is human. Your nature is divinity. You're essentially divine. So don't define yourself saying that it's okay for me to do mistakes, it's okay for me to not be like this. So when we do such things, I think that is when we actually confine ourselves to our own comfort zones. So I think, just to summarize whatever I said, the question was about some people taking more time to achieve a given task, some people being able to do it faster, and about generally achievements itself. Some people are able to acquire some things, some talents or some abilities faster. Some people need to put more effort and energy into it. One thing is to accept it, that we are all different externally and we accept it. Or is there something that we can do in a form of self-improvement? So for the first part of the question, what I said was, any task that we take up, I think we need to define the idea of perfection in that particular scenario. If that particular work requires swiftness, if swiftness is part of the perfection of the idea of that work, I think then we need to work on it. If not, if we have the luxury of time, and if it is our callousness which is leading to finish that task fast and get done with it, I think then maybe going slow and doing it more diligently and doing it more carefully is important. Not all works are like that. So I think first and foremost, we need to define what is the idea of perfection for that particular work and accordingly redefine the effort that needs to go into that. Talking about the ability to achieve something more quickly in comparison to others. Yes, some people have that lower threshold point. As I said, it all starts with the resolve to achieve it, or that sankalpa that I want to achieve this. Without that, Swami says, it doesn't happen at all. And that has to come from the source. You need to make that resolve and you need to commit yourself to that. It starts from that. And then, as I said, a little bit of self-effort and self-confidence is the investment that we need to make. And there is a certain threshold point after which we see that our efforts are bearing fruit. And that threshold point is different for different people. And we need to acknowledge that. And if we feel that our threshold point is higher, I think that's when it becomes important to go back to that will or that desire to achieve it. If the sankalpa or the intention behind that sankalpa is a higher purpose, it's attached to a higher purpose, I think we need to be self-motivated enough to push it. And it always helps to be amongst positive people, people who believe in us and people who help us improve our self-confidence. And I think we need to put more effort in that sense. And then I spoke about this idea of stepping out of our comfort zones. And any true achievement does not happen working within our comfort zones. And I think it's very important for us to look at our lives and see what are the things that we claim to be our achievements. Actually, they're not our achievements at all. Much of it is a gift of the scenario that we've been placed in. Of course, it comes from past karmas, but my humble suggestion would be don't think about the past karmas, because that's not in our control. It's done and there's nothing we can do about it. If we look at our life from this point, I think much of what we claim to be achievements are things that we have just built upon the benefits that we have got. And the moment we start acknowledging that, we'll automatically become more humble, become more grateful to the people around us, become more grateful to God for giving the various opportunities. And if we want to achieve something, especially when we're talking about the spiritual progress, unless we step out of our comfort zones, that's why I think all of these questions that we handle as part of the answering booth are about problems that come to our life. It's one thing to look at them as problems and succumb to the problem or start doing things which will help you save that situation or you come out of that situation. But the moment you start talking about spiritual progress, the way you look at challenges in life has to be different, because these adversities which come to our life are an opportunity for us to do something different. If the same problem is coming to us and if we are reacting to it the same way, if we are doing the same thing in response to that problem, then I think we are operating within the comfort zone. Can we do something out of that thing, and can we think out of the box? As Swami would say that, there's a situation in family, there's a problem, and if you're going to deal with it the same way that you've dealt with it for so many years, then the result is going to be the same. Can you put more love into that situation? Can you put more patience into that situation, more than what you have ever put or more than what you thought you were capable of? I think that is what is stepping out of our comfort zones. And to make spiritual progress, we cannot achieve it being within our comfort zones. And Swami says that yes, there will be progress, but there will be a very, very, very gradual progress, and probably you will take lifetimes and lifetimes going from this birth to a better birth and that birth to a little better birth than that. But if we want to step out of this cycle and achieve something higher than this plane, then Swami says that we need to do this of stepping out of our comfort zones. So thank you, Sister Poorna. I hope what I spoke made sense and gave you something to think about. If there's anything more that you need to ask, I'll be happy to address that, and you can write to me. With that, dear listeners, it's time for me to wrap up. If you have a question that you'd like me to answer on this show, feel free to write to me. My mail ID is prem@radiosci.org. That's prem@radiosci.org. If you can record your questions in your own voice and send it to me, that'll be beautiful, just like how Sister Poorna did. I most humbly offer this effort at Swami's Lotus Feet. I'm going to leave you with a beautiful song sung by one of our brothers for one of the dramas that was staged in the Kulwant Hall. On the other side of it, you'll be joined by Brother Bishu and his team and the members of the Vahini Satsang team for the next episode of the Vahini Satsang on Prem Vahini. I'll join you again next week, 7:30 p.m. for the next episode of Radio Sai Answering Booth. Thank you for your patient listening, and happy listening for the next program.
जब जब जीवन नैया डूबन लागे मन घबराए तुझे पुकारे ओ सुन मन की सदा
तेरी लीला है सबसे न्यारी छाई खुशियाँ सारी तेरी दया जियो पांडुरंगे
हमने सुना है ओ मेरे साई भगवान का रूप है तुम ही दया कर साथी मेरे महिमा तेरी